This is 99.5 North Seattle Grassroots Radio. That was Wire. Before that was The Smears and a silly little ad. The second commercial ever played on NSGR, which is for The Ventures. Buy their records, man. They're a hot new group out of Tacoma. Wow. And I don't know, some other shit. We have some folks here that were in D.C. and Seattle, and they're still here, well, in Seattle. One thing, one thing that we didn't talk about earlier, that I'm so horrible with names.
Sarah,
you were arrested and you were charged with like illegal lock boxes. And I know I'm kind of going off here a little bit, mm-hmm. but basically I just wanted to say that you still have you've got like a ruling where you're not allowed in a certain area, and that's still standing.
Yes, our lawyers had assumed that the stay-away order that we were given on the Thursday before the protests, we'd be able to appeal that afterwards, and they would remove the stay-away order, considering that it covered a 100-block area of downtown, and I live in the city, and it's nice to go downtown every now and then, go shopping, do different things. And the stay-away order is pretty strict. We're not even allowed to drive in a car through that area. We're allowed to take the Metro, which is the subway system in D.C., but we had to get a special exception in order to be able to do that, which covers three of the central Metro stations, which is pretty interesting. But the stay-away order, we did appeal that, and we just found out that the motion for our appeal was denied. So I, until my trial in July, theoretically am still, as a resident of D.C., not allowed to go to a 100-area block of downtown that has museums and all sorts of harmless things in it, because the police believe that at one point in the past I was going to commit a crime within that area, in one or two or three specific buildings. So
basically you're going to be screwed with until they throw it out.
That's really going to help me get a job this summer.
Shit. So we were talking about some other, I don't know, I want you guys to riff.
I have one of my personal pet peeves is the police raid on our Convergence Center, and the way that kind of the information about that got out, because the Convergence Center was a place for people to come and go to nonviolence trainings and to get fed and to meet up with other people and decide what was going to go on. And the police came in on the Friday or the Saturday before, and shut it down on the pretense of the fire marshal wanting to do an inspection, and then they found some things that were not up to the fire code, supposedly, and they normally would give you a certain amount of time, a few days, 24 hours at least, to correct these violations. Instead, they simply shut it down, kicked everyone out, arrested two organizers in the process, and confiscated literature, puppets, things that are protected under the First Amendment, and there are lawsuits involving that now. Medical supplies for the medics that were going to be out on the street were locked inside the Convergence Center and were not released until Monday, until it was pretty much too late to be using them. And the reasons for that happening were very shady. They said that they found homemade pepper spray inside, which later they explained more fully to be garlic, green peppers, some chili peppers. This was actually preparations for that evening's dinner.
Dangerous vegetables.
Exactly. So anybody who's got those in their kitchen at home, you might want to lock those away. And they found supposedly Molotov cocktails in like 2-liter soda bottles with the bottoms cut off with rags in them, which, to my understanding, were attempts at making homemade gas masks to protect themselves from the potential use of tear gas. People were trying to figure out a way to, instead of buying a costly gas mask that was then going to be confiscated, potentially, to make their own. Police came in, saw a bottle with the bottom cut off with a rag inside it, and said, Molotov cocktail! And that was another one of the things. And during the police press conference, initially, they said many things that they had found, supposedly, and then they later retracted some of those statements. And that was not publicized very widely. So the misinformation that they gave out was fairly successful. But there was an amazing sort of counter-protest at that point, with everyone that had been kicked out gathering outside, and people that were coming to meet at the Convergence Center that day joining in and demanding to get the puppets out, because they'd been working on just hundreds of different kinds of puppets, the huge puppet heads, the papier-mâché puppets, the bird puppets, things that had been brought in from Seattle and from other places that were all locked inside. And eventually the police did agree to let people, a small group of people, come in and get the puppets out. And it was just amazing to see some people standing out on the sidewalk saying the police are stealing our puppets with these big signs, and the police actually having to carry out our puppets later on to give back to us, and seeing those out on the streets in the news coverage was really great, because I think that that's part of the pageantry and the beauty of it all. And I was really at first concerned that they weren't going to release those things, probably more critical that things like the medical supplies were held until afterwards, and then of course the supposed fire hazards and so on were kind of disappeared, floated off into the air, and the conversion center was reopened almost immediately afterwards so that we could go in and get our things out and clean up and leave. So it's, to me, a fairly clear instance of the police trying to preemptively put a spin on things to deny us access to as much of the things that we're legally allowed to have as possible for protests and demonstrations of this kind, and to kind of put a scare into people. But it really didn't work, and it really, I think, it galvanized the people that were there, and it came together. We moved, we had a new conversion center set up within an hour practically. The trainings went on, the people still met. It was a little less organized in that sense than it could have been, but it didn't by any means stop us.
There's another action that happened during that week that didn't get much press. It was a housing action that didn't last too long, much along the same lines as the one that happened here in Seattle during the WTO, where activists seized the house, squatted it, and opened it up to the public for people to live in, under the pretext that, you know, we have all these empty apartment buildings, homes, warehouses, whatever, that are just lying empty because nobody wants to pay, you know, rent for them. Meanwhile, there's thousands of homeless people, you know, sleeping on our streets, which is a pretty ridiculous contradiction. So a group of people took over this really amazing, like, 6 or 7 story apartment building. They turned on the water and the lights and everything and had it going and painted it. It was really nice. Within, almost as soon as it went public, it was kind of far out of the way from, like, the center of what was things were happening, and the communication had kind of broken down. It was right after the Convergence Center had been raided. As soon as it went public, the cops knew about it. I think there was some sort of infiltration going on, and pretty much came in there and closed it down, dragged people out. A few people chose to, or most people were given a choice to leave, which they did, and then a few of the core organizers were dragged away forcibly. But this is an action that I didn't see much press about, and it was, I don't know, was possibly a really amazing thing that this home could have been opened up for people to, you know, actually live in, since that's what they're for, instead of making other people money.
I think that's part of the value of the independent media coverage also, because something like that would not necessarily be covered by the Washington Post or New York Times reporters who are busy running around trying to get bigger interviews. But that's one of the instances of attempting to take a large issue and make it really hit home on a local level by saying, we've got these homeless people here in Washington, D.C. We've got lots and lots of them, and we're the nation's capital. We get 1 billion tourists a year, and we're trying to hide these homeless people by putting them into inadequate shelters and harassing them on the streets and getting them to move to places where nobody would want to have to stay for a long time, much less live, when there's perfectly good buildings to be used. So the press coverage on things like that can help influence public opinion enough that squats can stay open. In Philadelphia, there's been a lot of success with having houses being squatted and getting local support for it. But it does take people knowing about it for that to happen, and that unfortunately didn't really happen with that action in D.C. as much.
Great thought. No words yet. I keep thinking about my experiences during the WTO, watching, I mean, now that's all I can really compare stuff to, but my own experiences and watching that, mm-hmm. and thinking about how amazing it felt to see, you know, to see what the I don't know, folks actually making a stand and changing shit. I do know that in the long term, things have to, like, sort of expand, and I know it's all steps. It's all small steps. And I know that you will, you know, Matt, and I'm so bad with names.
Blair.
yeah, I know you all are involved locally in some stuff. And can you talk more about that? Because, I mean, that's very important the to me, just the day-to-day stuff. that. My feet are very important to me, too.
Well, for me, I've been coming to grips with a lot of activist questions, like seeing since this movement is starting to really get off the ground. I've had a hard time staying committed to any sort of single issue campaigns because, for me, my concerns are like totalistic. They're like universal. They're not things that can be easily pigeonholed. So I've been trying to find something that could sustain my energy where I feel like I'm being effective and addressing like all my concerns, not just one manifestation of them. So with this in mind, I mean, a lot of the problems I see stem from hierarchy being ingrained into institutions such as like the market, such as, you know, command and obedience, social relations where, you know, from school to work where you're told what to do, things like that. Basically all the issues that anarchism since its inception has struggled to overcome. So with that in mind, we have just recently started this project called the Northwest Anarchist Federation, which is just an organization that exists to put forth an anarchist analysis of the problems that we face, bring to light some of the already existing examples of anarchist projects in action, such as Left Bank Books, a really amazing bookstore here in Seattle down in Pike Place Market, the Mutual Aid Legal Fund, which was a legal fund set up in the wake of the WTO to get money for the felony cases that were pretty much dropped by the Direct Action Network Legal Fund because they supposedly broke the nonviolence guidelines. Which has now taken off into a life of its own after the WTO into this kind of a larger jail solidarity legal fund for political prisoners, especially anarchist prisoners. But just to kind of get these examples of, I don't know, local anarchist projects in action out there and to put forth our own analysis of all the problems we face because, as we've seen, now it's starting to change, but it's been a lot of single-issue campaigns going on. And there hasn't been linkages made, and there hasn't been a lot of analysis of like what may be at the root of these causes. And it's already starting to broaden away from that, from WTO or genetically modified foods into like maybe capitalism itself or hierarchical structures and the way we relate to one another. So I think this project is an attempt to just get these broader concerns out there to get people to start looking at what lies underneath these individual manifestations of problems. Matt, maybe you want to talk more about that.
I think it's one of the biggest things that's come out of that is people are starting, out of the entire movement against globalization, and people, as they start to work on an action like the WTO, the IMF, with other activists from different backgrounds, they do start to see that interconnectedness, and I think a lot of people are starting to realize there is this kind of a root cause, the same reason why, you know, workers are being laid off domestically, why jobs are going overseas, why our environment is facing problems. And I think a lot of people are starting to relate that back to capitalism in turn, wanting to see that it is essentially, in my opinion, a problem of a hierarchical social structure of allowing someone else to dictate what your actions are going to be, what your decisions are going to be, and how you're going to live your life. So, for instance, like with the Northwest Anarchist Federation, a lot of it is trying to make those connections that are less traditionally political. I'm not talking about things in a governmental sense necessarily, or even in an academic sense, but making people see the, you know, how they face those struggles in daily life and how they interact with other people, whether it be, you know, through their work, through their employment, through their school, or even just, you know, towards their neighbors, why people don't have a sense of community anymore, why they feel alienated on so many different levels. I think that's a big project I'm really interested in, is trying to make, you know, politics a little more interesting than what people traditionally view them as, making people see things on a daily basis and on an individual basis of how they react with their social settings.
Excellent. Well, I think I've grabbed your all's time for, what, the last hour or so. Would you, anything else to say? Anything else to add? I think that's, I myself do think that the whole idea of individuals doing something, trying to, you know, make some sort of statement or stand, no immaterial about the level of it, just trying something is the right step. So I do actually really want to applaud you all for doing what you did in D.C. It's great.
I want to applaud you guys for doing what you do right here with North Seattle Grassroots Radio. I think it's phenomenal. It's a much-needed community resource.
Well, thank you.
That's one of those things that people can get out and do every day. They can do wonderful things like this and get involved and start something that they think would be fun, that they're interested in, that they can do on a basis that they're comfortable with, both politically, emotionally, with people that they enjoy working with, and not make living their lives such an awful thing to do.
Amen. All right. Well, I think I'm going to play another song. That's all right with you all. Thank you all.
Thank you.
And this is 99.5 North Seattle Grassroots Radio. And if you want to get involved with us, you can give us a call. We have a voicemail number. It's a silly number. It's 222-9508. We're always looking for more folks who want to be involved with us, as long as you do not have a little name tag that says you are an employee of the FCC. Other than that,
or any other police agency.
Yeah, fuck the police.